I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, it's a Friday morning. We made it to Friday. We were sweating with the oldies yesterday. I'm telling you, man, it was, you couldn't step out of the house and not just be drenched in sweat. It was
pool water.
Miserable out there, but Carl's reminding everyone and rubbing the salt in the wound this morning, and he was in a pool yesterday. Did you actually get in the pool this time?
I did.
Your wife pressured you into it?
Yes.
All right. That's good.
And she was in as well.
I know. Down at One Cardinal Way, we got a good friend down there, Smitty, who's got a place, and he's invited us down a couple day games in a row. I didn't get to go yesterday, but what a great experience that is. You can see the game. You can see the empty stadium over there, and then you can be in the pool with a cocktail watching it on the big screen.
A cocktail that doesn't cost $10.
Well, I don't know how expensive they are.
Well, they have you can't bring your own there, yeah. So you have to use their bar.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's
but it
that.
Is yes, it is not as expensive as
it's the stadium. That's
actually $10 is cheap. What's a normal beer cost at Busch Stadium?
Well, it's $11 or $12.
Yes,
right?
But it's also a double because it's 24.
Well,
ounces,
yeah, mostly you're getting a big can. And I'm going to Hollywood Casino Amphitheater this weekend, and I have a couple of friends who have the lawn pass. Right, they're there for every possible concert. I don't know if I could do that, but they go to all of them, and good for them. They have a good time. They were complaining the other day that between the last concert they went to and the most recent, they claim beer prices went up $2 a beer
surge
at Hollywood
pricing.
Casino. I don't
Thanks,
know if it's
sur-
if it's is it surge pricing?
I have no idea.
I don't know.
Everything costs more now.
I guess I'll find out on
Mark won't have that problem on.
I think I'll find out on Saturday night what it's gone up to.
Let us know on Monday when you come here, Mark.
Woo, I will.
Kim
let you know what beer's
here.
Selling for.
But you will.
I will not be here Monday. They actually gave us the holiday off. What are the plans for that morning, Carl? Do we know?
Yes, there's going to be three Fox specials. First of all, Gordon Deal is going to go on for another hour.
Okay.
Then at 6, there'll be Road to Election 2024.
Got it. So enjoy your Labor Day, and so will we. So that's a good thing this weekend. All right. Here's the deal. We have got Attorney General Andrew Bailey coming up at the bottom of the hour. I invited him on to talk about, among other things, the judge's ruling kind of throwing out the Second Amendment Preservation Act. And we'll get him. But since we do have him on the phone anyway, I want to ask him about this appeals court decision in Texas regarding people who partake in marijuana, the devil's lettuce, but who also like to buy guns, because right now that's illegal. But a Texas ruling said that it's unconstitutional to prosecute people for that. And I'm anxious to hear his take on how that might impact things for gun buyers and pot users here in the state of Missouri. That's coming up at 7:35. J.J. Carafano is going to be up next. He had some interesting Twitter comments yesterday about the Kamala Harris interview, particularly relating to foreign policy, but just in general, because, of course, he does policy, not politics, as he reminds us. So we'll get to Jim coming up in a few minutes. Right now, here are our top stories.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
You were a very staunch defender of President Biden's capacity to serve another 4 years right after the debate. Do you have any regrets about what you told the American people?
No, not at all.
No, not at all. Not at all. I'm not lying to you at all.
Chicken crap.
Yeah, come on, Kamala.
We were talking about, in this case, this was after a school shooting, the ideas of carrying these weapons of war. And my wife, the English tone, my grammar's not always correct.
Yeah, so, gentlemen, the next time your wife accuses you of lying about something, just tell her you're not very good at grammar. Let me know how that works for you, please.
Last night showed us the Kamala Harris who's going to lose the election.
Yeah, Newt Gingrich with some interesting observations on that last night. I thought he thinks that Kamala Harris spent a whole lot of time and explained absolutely nothing.
To achieve this rapid reduction in energy costs, I will declare a national emergency to allow us to dramatically increase energy production.
On day one. So when Donald Trump tells you this is what I'm going to do on day one, it will actually be day one. When Kamala Harris tells you that, it's actually day 1,345. I made up that number, but it's something like that because she's been in office for 3.5 years.
I thought that was one of the better questions Dana Bash asked last night to her on CNN was
on climate.
Well, no, was, you know, she was like, oh, we need to turn the page, you know, new era. She's like, well, 3.5 of those years, you've been a part of the administration. You know, why now? Why have you waited? Like, for example, on the immigration thing, why have you not? Why did it take you 3.5 years to try to do anything? Well, and then, of course, she just blamed Trump for why nothing went through.
Here's the thing. Dana Bash committed journalistic malpractice last night. It was embarrassing to watch her schmooze and suck up to these two individuals. She didn't want to offend them. They want to be in charge of the free world, the leader of the free world of this country. And she would not ask them a straight question. Like, she's looking at Trump, but you said this, but you said that. And with Kamala Harris, well, how do you feel? Like, what would your answer be to this? Like, if someone asked you this, what would you say to them? Like, she soft-pedaled every question. And in many cases, she kind of gave them the answer while she was asking the question. And, you know, that's weak. I, as a journalist, that's weak. You don't even have to be a journalist. How would you have handled this? Listen.
Generally speaking, how should voters look at some of the changes that you've made, that you've explained some of here?
Dana, those are called flip-flops.
In your policy, is it because you have more experience now and you've learned more about the information? Is it because you were running for president in a Democratic primary? And should they feel comfortable and confident that what you're saying now is going to be your policy moving forward?
Yeah, it should have been, why have you flip-flopped and why should people trust you? Not, you know, should they?
Why do you want to ban internal combustion engines? Why do you think the energy grid can support all electric cars and by 2030 in 6 years? Why? Why do you embrace the climate deal that punishes production?
She said, Dana asked, what is it that changed? Like, what did you learn about fracking that made you change your mind? And she didn't really answer the question.
Listen to her answer here.
Dana, I think the most important and most significant aspect of my policy perspective and decisions is my values have not changed. You mentioned the Green New Deal. I have always believed, and I have worked on it, that the climate crisis is real, that it is an urgent matter to which we should apply metrics that include holding ourselves to deadlines around time.
We should apply metrics that include holding ourselves to deadlines around time. That is a complete waste of words and of breath that you might need sometime later in your life. What did that? She says things that don't mean anything.
Dana should have said, give me three examples of what that would look like.
Yeah.
You know, she should have asked for specifics. She let her off the hook. She didn't ask really important follow-up questions. She did a couple times. To her credit, she did a couple times. But she had so many missed opportunities.
Huge, huge missed opportunities. Same with Waltz. I want to play this bite for you here real quick. I don't know if we have enough time, Carl. Play part of cut four for me, please. Waltz.
Well, first of all, I'm incredibly proud. I've done 24 years of wearing the uniform of this country. Equally proud of my service in a public school classroom, whether it's Congress or the governor. My record speaks for itself, but I think people are coming to get to know me. I speak like they do. I speak candidly. I wear my emotions on my sleeves, and I speak especially passionately about our children being shot in schools and around guns. So I think people know me. They know who I am. They know where my heart is. And again, my record has been out there for over 40 years to speak for itself.
And the idea that you said that you were in war, yeah. Did you misspeak, as the campaign has said?
Yeah, I said we were talking about, in this case, this was after a school shooting, the ideas of carrying these weapons of war. And my wife, the English teacher, told me my grammar's not always correct. But again, if it's not this, it's an attack on my children for showing love for me or it's an attack on my dog. I'm not going to do that. And the one thing I'll never do is I'll never demean another member.
Yada, yada, yada. Come back to me. You lied. You lied when you said you carried a weapon in war. These are the same weapons I carried in war. That's not bad grammar. That's a lie. And nobody would be able to get away with that except this guy. And Dana Bash didn't call him out on it. Sir, that's not a grammar problem. That's a lie. Why did it take him for 5 weeks to come up with that excuse? That it's pathetic. All right. We're going to get to J.J. Carafano coming up from Heritage. I'm anxious for his thoughts on what, if anything, we learned about Kamala's Middle East policy yesterday. And we'll get to Attorney General Andrew Bailey at the bottom of the hour.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Deserve, which is a new way forward and turn the page on the last decade of what I believe has been contrary to where the spirit of our country really lies.
But the last decade, of course, the last 3.5 years has been part of your administration.
I'm talking about an era that started about a decade ago where there is some suggestion, warped, I believe it to be, that the measure of the strength of a leader is based on who you beat down instead of where I believe most Americans are, which is to believe that the true measure of the strength of a leader is based on who you lift up.
You know, I was born in the South. South Bronx. Welcome to the
jungle. Jim Carafano, my first exposure to that particular soundbite was your tweet that said, what did she just say? I love that.
Well, look, it is true. America is a changing country. It really started in the 90s under Clinton. And, we're a country where our parties have become less ideologically and geographically diverse, and they're moving in two different directions. And it is a real question of choice, but it's actually a choice of issues. Like open borders, border security, woke politics, traditional family values, excessive government spending, high inflation, reduced government spending, less regulation, energy independence, gas and oil, green transition. I mean, and these are not things where you can just kind of meet in the middle. You know, we can't have like half a green transition. So I kind of agree with her. This last decade has shown that we're a changing country, it's because we've reached a fork in the road. But it's not about the nonsense that I don't even know what you said. It's about two fundamentally different visions of the future of America, and pick one.
Right.
And she says pick one based on, promise and hope and change and joy and, let's not be burdened about the past. And the other guy says pick one based on who has better policy. So pick one.
Yeah, pick one. In this particular case, Barack Obama or Joe Biden were president for 5.5 years of the last decade. And Dana Bash didn't. I mean, she kind of alluded to that, but you guys were in charge for the past 3.5 years. So she didn't even know what she was talking about. It's just more word salad. I did think it was also interesting.
Oh, they know exactly what they were talking about. I mean, the only question is the question is how much do you want? Do you want the child-sized portion of word salad at 18 minutes? Or would you have preferred an adult-sized portion of word salad?
Would you like to supersize that for 99 cents more?
Exactly.
What do you think of her?
I'm not political. I mean, I tell people, but it's just, what did you hear last night that really got to concrete issues? And this is, I think, the problem here is we have campaigns that are based on narrative and adjectives. But the real difference between our candidates are very, very solid and substantial policy choices.
I mean, speaking of those, I mean, what do you think of her response about the Middle East? You know, she's like, oh, well, I think Israel has a right to defend itself. But she obviously supports, as she said, the two-state solution. Who's going to tell her that Palestine's not going to be down with that? Hamas doesn't want that because they don't think Israel should exist.
Yeah, she's, well, look, first of all, she said nothing about a Middle East policy that's any different than the Middle East policy that Joe Biden has, which is demonstrably failed. So I guess we're not unburdened by the past. But I do think there's a difference here. And I say this not just looking at her, but the people that she's surrounded with. You know, Biden is trapped between kind of traditional democratic recognition that Israel's a vital ally and this wanting to embrace Iran and all this other nonsense. She is not. She is with the Islamist wing of the Democratic Party, and that's the direction that foreign policy will go in under her. I just believe that because it's not just her. It's every single advisor around her and where they want to take our policy in the Middle East.
Well, you know, maybe you get a job as an advisor when Secretary of State Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez gets confirmed.
Look, I've been toying with this idea because I'm not sure how to express this because I want to say it correctly. But I think we're going to wind up with a major Islamist political party in the United States.
Wow.
There's so much, not because there's so many Muslims in the United States, but because there's so much money behind this. And I don't know if it's going to be the Democratic Party or if the Democratic Party splinters and we're going to have a separate Islamist party in the United States. But I think that's the direction we're going in. And again, it's not because more Muslims are living here. I mean, the numbers are not that big. It's because there's so much money and power and politics behind this. And it's mostly done in the dark.
Wow. I'd never heard that before, but I think that's an interesting concept. We'll know shortly. If she wins, that could happen pretty quickly, I would think. Jim, listen, appreciate you, my friend. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, I'll try. I'm stuck in airports, so you know how
no.
that goes.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I do. Be careful out there. We'll talk to you soon. All right. Jim Carafano there in an airport this morning, sounds like. Coming up, we've got Attorney General Andrew Bailey joining us on the phone. Of course, he is running for re-election. He's now the Republican nominee for that position. And I'm anxious to talk to him about that court ruling this week that threw out the Second Amendment Preservation Act. We'll get to all that and more coming up. All right. Can't wait. By the way, I'm going to see Sammy Hagar Saturday night.
Who's Sammy Hagar again? Never heard of him.
Yeah. Van Halen, half of Van Halen will be there anyway. All right. Looking forward to that. Hey, by the way, I talked about this the other day. A judge has put a temporary hold or at least locked out the Second Amendment Preservation Act in the state of Missouri. And I'm certain this is going to get appealed. What does it mean? Well, we have the Attorney General of Missouri on the phone right now, Andrew Bailey. And Mr. Attorney General, welcome back.
Hey, Mark, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. What was your reaction to that decision by a federal court?
Look, I disagree with the three-judge panel from the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals on this. You know, people need to remember the Second Amendment Preservation Act is not only about protecting Missourians' right to keep and bear arms. It's about the Tenth Amendment as well. And the Tenth Amendment says that any authority not given to the federal government or expressly denied to the states is enjoyed by the states and the people of the states. And really all the legislature did in SAPA was codify the anti-commandeering doctrine that's found in Supreme Court jurisprudence interpreting the 10th Amendment. And when I say that, what I mean is the state made a policy decision to say, we are not going to let federal officials coerce state and local law enforcement to achieve unconstitutional gun registration and gun grabs. That's all it says. And again, this is something that exists in United States Supreme Court case law. And yeah, everybody talks about standing and how important standing is under Article 3 to get into the federal judiciary. You have to be able to demonstrate a cognizable harm, a concrete harm suffered by one of the parties in the lawsuit's actions. Well, how can the federal government demonstrate that they are harmed at all? The law doesn't limit them. It just says we're not going to carry out your unconstitutional mandate.
Well, I mean, I'm assuming now this ends up, you think it goes to the Supreme Court at some point?
Mark, I'm proud to announce we're going to appeal to the United States Supreme Court. We're going to seek a petition for writ of certiorari and get this in front of the Supreme Court. I think it's important that the court weigh in because the question here is, Do states still have sovereignty? Can we as states, under the 10th Amendment, still manage our own law enforcement apparatus at the state and local levels? Or do we have to be under the thumb of the federal government? And my position is that the 10th Amendment still means something.
You've had some pretty big wins relative to Biden's student loan forgiveness plan and also related to his rewriting of Title IX. So what did these rulings specifically mean now? What happens from here?
Well, proud to be fighting and winning for Missourians and really for freedom-loving people across the United States of America. The student loan case is personal to me, you know, as someone who went to the University of Missouri on an Army ROTC scholarship and then back to law school on the post 9/11 GI Bill. We can't let Joe Biden saddle working Missouri families with Ivy League debt. And the Supreme Court had already told him no once before. So he went back to the well, and it's unconstitutional. He has no authority to redistribute wealth. He doesn't have authority over the power of the purse. The Constitution gives that authority to Congress. So if they want to do this, Congress has to pass a bill. Well, Congress has twice rejected a bill because it's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
So the president can't just unilaterally, with the flick of a pen, redistribute $500 billion in debt. That would have cost Missouri north of $44 million. And so proud of the work we've done to put a stop to it. Supreme Court has now told Biden no twice. But look, he's going to go back to the well. He's so desperate to buy votes for Kamala Harris, the anointed one, the border czar, who would be a failure in her own right. But they're so desperate to buy votes for her that I'm certain they'll roll out a plan C at this point, and we'll have to put a stop to it as well. On Title IX, look, that for 50 years, Title IX has stood for equality for women. And again, President Biden tried to rewrite a statute by saying that men could be president in women's locker rooms. This is not something the American people want. And the American people understand why it's important to have that physical separation in private places like locker rooms and bathrooms between men and women. And the American people want equality for women in athletic competition. And so President Biden has no authority to rewrite law. We put a stop to that as well. Two huge wins.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, speaking of that issue of men and women's locker rooms, the situation at the Lifetime in Ellisville, I mean, I think Lifetime kind of dodged the issue there by getting rid of the guy because he had posed a threat of some sort. But what about the bigger issue of the state of Missouri? And I hear they're going to revise this policy. What about them giving you the opportunity to change the gender on your driver's license on a whim? How did that ever become a thing without the legislature making that decision? Do we know?
I do not know. It was wrong. And my understanding is it has been corrected, and as well it should be. That is absolutely absurd. You know, we go through all this process of getting a state ID, and you think about like the real ID and the need to have state IDs conform to certain security parameters so we can use them to fly nationally when we go to the airport. And you remember there were problems getting the Missouri IDs years ago. There were problems getting the Missouri IDs to get to a security level to have sufficient safeguards in place to make sure that they couldn't be forged or fraudulently manufactured.
Right.
So then why would we allow people to just change their gender on a whim? That's insane. That's a security threat. It's absolutely a terrible policy position. And the agency had no authority to do that. Only the General Assembly could. My understanding is that's been corrected. And again, I believe that's the proper legal position.
What I've heard is you now need a court order or a note from a doctor or something like that saying that you've actually had the reassignment surgery. Is that your understanding of the changes too?
Yes, absolutely. And the reason I say that's the proper legal position is because that's what it says in regards to your birth certificate. Missouri state statute was amended in around 2010, 2011, sometime in there, to say that, hey, if you're going to change your birth certificate, you got to go get surgery. And you got to have a doctor say you had surgery. It's not enough just to say, oh, today I wake up and I'm feeling different. Yeah. And so that puts a little more leverage over it to make sure that people aren't just playing games with this. This is a fashion statement nationally, and it's really frightening to me because it's people denying objective reality, and it has real serious safety concerns. I myself prosecuted a convicted sex offender male who was hiding in a women's restroom, and it's now the leading case on criminal trespass in the state of Missouri. And we prosecuted him because he was there to perp on it. He wanted more victims. He wanted to create another victim. Luckily, law enforcement intercepted him and prevented that. But, I mean, that's the kind of security threat, the kind of public safety risk I'm talking about.
Yeah. Attorney General Andrew Bailey with us this morning. Of course, he's running for re-election to that office now in November. You know, I wanted to ask, I didn't prep you on this, and I apologize if you that's aren't right. familiar with it. But a Texas Court of Appeals this week ruled that a lady in Texas could not be found in violation of the federal law she had several past marijuana convictions and apparently used pot pretty regularly. And she basically, I guess, lied on her form 4473 and got in trouble for that. And it said that that's illegal is what the appeals court ruled. I mean, obviously, this is a point of contention that Congress needs to deal with at some point, since pot is still illegal federally. But a lot of states like Missouri have it legal recreationally.
Yeah, and I go to this question of, you know, where does the federal authority end and state authority take over? And again, these are 10th Amendment issues. I mean, look, the marijuana thing looks a lot like the SAPA thing.
Yeah.
I mean, marijuana is illegal at the federal level. The federal government has said you can't possess marijuana, and yet states like Missouri and others have said, well, we think you can. Well, it's the same thing. Is the federal government able to commandeer the apparatus of state government to carry out a federal policy position? And under the anti-commandeering doctrine, the answer is no.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think Congress needs to act on it, quite frankly, because you've got, what, half the states now have recreational marijuana?
Yeah, you know, I think this is a question for the people's elected representatives. I agree that that's the proper venue for these decisions to be made. But look, I mean, how many bills get through Congress? What is Congress doing lately? I mean, the problem is there's such gridlock and such inactivity that it leaves this power vacuum that has been, taken over by this radical progressive Biden-Harris administration. And that's why these elections coming up in November at the state and federal level are going to be so important.
Did you enjoy any of the word salad last night in the CNN interview with Kamala Harris?
You know, she's just incomprehensible. I mean, this woman, it's like Stalinist Russia, where the history and what people have seen and heard of her, it's like it doesn't exist anymore. Her policy positions, you know, the fact that she was the border czar, she wants to erase all of that and recreate herself as if we're all stupid and weren't paying attention over the past years. And it's not going to work.
Yeah, I pray that you're right on that for sure. Mr. Attorney General, we appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Hey, really appreciate y'all. God bless you and your listeners.
Appreciate you. The Attorney General Andrew Bailey there. Good to get him on this morning. Yeah, I hadn't even thought about the parallels there between the SAPA case and this marijuana case. It'll be interesting to see where that goes legally. Glad that was good timing that we got him on today to talk about that. What are we talking about on Kim on a Whim this time?
I think a lot of people have an opinion on college athletes potentially making...
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Can't wait. By the way, I'm going to see Sammy Hagar Saturday night.
Who's Sammy Hagar again? Never heard of him.
Van Halen, half of Van Halen will be there anyway. All right. Looking forward to that. Hey, by the way, I talked about this the other day. A judge has put a temporary hold, or at least locked out, the Second Amendment Preservation Act in the state of Missouri. And I'm certain this is going to get appealed. What does it mean? Well, we have the Attorney General of Missouri on the phone right now, Andrew Bailey. And Mr. Attorney General, welcome back.
Hey, Mark, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. What was your reaction to that decision by a federal court?
Look, I disagree with the 3-judge panel from the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals on this. You know, people need to remember the Second Amendment Preservation Act is not only about protecting Missourians' right to keep and bear arms. It's about the 10th Amendment as well. And the 10th Amendment says that any authority not given to the federal government or expressly denied to the states is enjoyed by the states and the people of the states. And really all the legislature did in SAPA was codify the anti-commandeering doctrine that's found in Supreme Court jurisprudence interpreting the 10th Amendment. And when I say that, what I mean is the state made a policy decision to say, we are not going to let federal officials coerce state and local law enforcement to achieve unconstitutional gun registration and gun grabs. That's all it says. And again, this is something that exists in United States Supreme Court case law. And yeah, everybody talks about standing and how important standing is under Article 3 to get into the federal judiciary. You have to be able to demonstrate a cognizable harm, a concrete harm suffered by one of the parties in the lawsuit's actions. Well, how can the federal government demonstrate that they are harmed at all? The law doesn't limit them. It just says, we're not going to carry out your unconstitutional mandate.
Well, I mean, I'm assuming now this ends up, you think it goes to the Supreme Court at some point?
Mark, I'm proud to announce we're going to appeal to the United States Supreme Court. We're going to seek a petition for writ of certiorari and get this in front of the Supreme Court. I think it's important that the court weigh in, because the question here is, do states still have sovereignty? Can we as states, under the 10th Amendment, still manage our own law enforcement apparatus at the state and local levels? Or do we have to be under the thumb of the federal government? And my position is that the 10th Amendment still means something.
You've had some pretty big wins relative to Biden's student loan forgiveness plan and also related to his rewriting of Title IX. So what did these rulings specifically mean now? What happens from here?
Well, proud to be fighting and winning for Missourians and really for freedom-loving people across the United States of America. The student loan case is personal to me, you know, as someone who went to the University of Missouri on an Army ROTC scholarship and then back to law school on the post 9/11 GI Bill. We can't let Joe Biden saddle working Missouri families with Ivy League debt. And the Supreme Court had already told him no once before. So he went back to the well, and it's unconstitutional. He has no authority to redistribute wealth. He doesn't have authority over the power of the purse. The Constitution gives that authority to Congress. So if they want to do this, Congress has to pass a bill. Well, Congress has twice rejected a bill because it's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
So the president can't just unilaterally, with the flick of a pen, redistribute $500 billion in debt. That would have cost Missouri north of $44 million. And so proud of the work we've done to put a stop to it. Supreme Court has now told Biden no twice. But look, he's going to go back to the well. He's so desperate to buy votes for Kamala Harris, the anointed one, the border czar, who would be a failure in her own right, but they're so desperate to buy votes for her that I'm certain they'll roll out a plan C at this point, and we'll have to put a stop to it as well. On Title IX, look, that for 50 years, Title IX has stood for equality for women. And again, President Biden tried to rewrite a statute by saying that men could be president in women's locker rooms. This is not something the American people want. And the American people understand why it's important to have that physical separation in private places like locker rooms and bathrooms between men and women. And the American people want equality for women in athletic competition. And so President Biden has no authority to rewrite law. We put a stop to that as well. Two huge wins.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, speaking of that issue of men and women's locker rooms, the situation at the Lifetime in Ellisville, I mean, I think Lifetime kind of dodged the issue there by getting rid of the guy because he had posed a threat of some sort. But what about the bigger issue of the state of Missouri? And I hear they're going to revise this policy. What about them giving you the opportunity to change the gender on your driver's license on a whim? How did that ever become a thing without the legislature making that decision? Do we know?
I do not know. It was wrong. And my understanding is it has been corrected, and as well it should be. That is absolutely absurd. You know, we go through all this process of getting a state ID, and you think about like the real ID and the need to have state IDs conform to certain security parameters so we can use them to fly nationally when we go to the airport. And you remember there were problems getting the Missouri IDs years ago. There were problems getting the Missouri IDs to get to a security level to have sufficient safeguards in place to make sure that they couldn't be forged or fraudulently manufactured.
Right.
So then why would we allow people to just change their gender on a whim? That's insane. That's a security threat. It's absolutely a terrible policy position. And the agency had no authority to do that. Only the General Assembly could. My understanding is that's been corrected. And again, I believe that's the proper legal position.
What I've heard is you now need a court order or a note from a doctor or something like that saying that you've actually had the reassignment surgery. Is that your understanding of the changes too?
Yes, absolutely. And the reason I say that's the proper legal position is because that's what it says in regards to your birth certificate. Missouri state statute was amended around 2010, 2011, sometime in there, to say that, hey, if you're going to change your birth certificate, you got to go get surgery. And you got to have a doctor say you had surgery. It's not enough just to say, oh, today I wake up and I'm feeling different.
Yeah.
And so that puts a little more leverage over it to make sure that people aren't just playing games with this. This is a fashion statement nationally, and it's really it's frightening to me because it's people denying objective reality, and it has real serious safety concerns. I myself prosecuted a convicted sex offender male who was hiding in a women's restroom, and it's now the leading case on criminal trespass in the state of Missouri. And we prosecuted him because he was there to perp on it. He wanted more victims. He wanted to create another victim. Luckily, law enforcement intercepted him and prevented that. But, I mean, that's the kind of security threat, the kind of public safety risk I'm talking about.
Yeah. Attorney General Andrew Bailey with us this morning. Of course, he's running for re-election to that office now in November. You know, I wanted to ask, I didn't prep you on this, and I apologize if you aren't familiar with it. But a Texas Court of Appeals this week ruled that a lady in Texas could not be found in violation of the federal law she had several past marijuana convictions and apparently used pot pretty regularly. And she basically, I guess, lied on her form 4473 and got in trouble for that. And it said that that's illegal is what the appeals court ruled. I mean, obviously, this is a point of contention that Congress needs to deal with at some point, since pot is still illegal federally. But a lot of states like Missouri have it legal recreationally.
Yeah, and I go to this question of, you know, where does the federal authority end and state authority take over? And again, these are 10th Amendment issues. I mean, look, the marijuana thing looks a lot like the SAPA thing.
Yeah.
I mean, marijuana is illegal at the federal level. The federal government has said you can't possess marijuana, and yet states like Missouri and others have said, well, we think you can. Well, it's the same thing. Is the federal government able to commandeer the apparatus of state government to carry out a federal policy position? And under the anti-commandeering doctrine, the answer is no.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think Congress needs to act on it, quite frankly, because you've got, what, half the states now have recreational marijuana?
Yeah, I think this is a question for the people's elected representatives. I agree that that's the proper venue for these decisions to be made. But look, I mean, how many bills get through Congress? What is Congress doing lately? I mean, the problem is there's such gridlock and such inactivity that it leaves this power vacuum that has been, taken over by this radical progressive Biden-Harris administration. And that's why these elections coming up in November at the state and federal level are going to be so important.
Did you enjoy any of the word salad last night in the CNN interview with Kamala Harris?
You know, she's just incomprehensible. I mean, this woman, it's like Stalinist Russia, where the history and what people have seen and heard of her, it's like it doesn't exist anymore. Her policy positions, you know, the fact that she was the border czar, she wants to erase all of that and recreate herself as if we're all stupid and weren't paying attention over the past years. And it's not going to work.
Yeah, I pray that you're right on that for sure. Mr. Attorney General, we appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Hey, really appreciate y'all. God bless you and your listeners.
Appreciate you. The Attorney General Andrew Bailey there. Good to get him on this morning. Yeah, I hadn't even thought about the parallels there between the SAPA case and this marijuana case. It'll be interesting to see where that goes legally. Glad that was good timing that we got him on today to talk about that. What are we talking about on Kim on a Whim this time?
I think a lot of people have an opinion on college athletes potentially making millions of dollars from NIL, right? Name, image, and likeness.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now politicians are getting involved, offering, in some cases, thousands of dollars in exchange for an endorsement.
Wow. We'll get to that coming up. Stay tuned.
Kim on a Whim.
Kim on a Whim is proudly brought to you by Missouri Brush Control. Enjoy your land the way you've always dreamed of. Learn more at MissouriBrushControl.com.
Forget having to go to the NFL. You don't need it anymore. You don't have to go to you don't have to be a professional anymore in your sport to potentially make millions, right? Thanks to NIL and the changes recently, these college athletes are raking in a ridiculous amount of money. Now, I have some frustration with NIL. But now I'm even more irritated hearing that a politician from Montana, or at least some group that is allegedly, well, the politician's like, oh, I have nothing to do with this group that's offering these student athletes at the University of Montana thousands of dollars in exchange for an endorsement. This group is called Montana Together. They reach out to all these athletes and they say, here's what we're going to do. If you're willing to record two scripted videos endorsing Senator John Tester, who's running for, I believe, a fourth term as U.S. Senator in Montana.
Democrat.
A Democrat. Thank you. If you do two scripted videos, $400. You do two unscripted videos, we're going to give you $800. And Mark Cox, if you're willing to do four unscripted videos, these athletes would take in $2,400. $2,400. There was one student I saw, a female, who was quoted in this article saying that she was very irritated when she saw this because she says, as a female athlete, why the heck would I put out my endorsement for a politician who is in favor of men competing in women's sports? But when you dangle $2,400 in front of these athletes,
yeah,
I mean, come on. I bet you a lot of them might be like, well, I don't really know if I support them. But well, there should be, but are there? I mean, who's to say this isn't happening in other states? Who's to say this isn't happening in Illinois and Missouri?
And if you weren't on that particular athlete's social media, you might not know about it. I mean, it could be happening. You're right. I don't know.
Well, and that's the
thing. I just can't believe the school wouldn't have some restriction on that. Normally, I think for NIL money, the money has to be funneled through the school for it to be legal. Like, not the school, but the I know there's a group that through the alumni down at Mizzou who is now actively working in the St. Louis area to recruit businesses and wealthy individuals who are willing to donate to these NIL causes, right? So they can attract big athletes who might want to come to the University of Missouri and play basketball or football or whatever the case may be. They have to go out and do that. But I think it is regulated to some extent. It can't just be for anything.
But keep in mind, these schools are going to be competing now for the amount that they're offering these athletes. So if they have another avenue for these athletes to make money, in this case, you know, it relates to politics, I don't know that a school would stop them, because the school might make the argument, well, as an athlete, you have the option to say no. If this goes against your values, you just don't support it.
I've been opposed to this from the beginning. And as I explain this, I hope you'll understand, I don't have a problem if they want to move to a situation where student athletes are given a stipend by the university. University, particularly in the case of the sports that make money, like basketball and football, because of gate receipts, if they want to pay those students because they're earning a profit for the university through those sports, I understand that. Maybe you give them $500 a month or something so they have spending money, but you give it to everybody. You give it to everybody from the third string lineman to the starting quarterback. Everybody gets the same amount. There's no disparity there just because one person plays more often than the other. You have to play it across the board. And instead, they didn't do that, even though many of them are on scholarship. Instead of that, they said, okay, well, if you're really good, you can make $2 million while everybody else on the team makes nothing.
Right, that's going to create the animosity among the team.
When we came in earlier this week, there was some product sitting on the counter back here from Luther Burden, the wide receiver for Mizzou.
Right.
And his NIL deal was with some potato chips or something, right?
Cookies.
And Red Hot Riblets.
Yeah. And Brady Cook just signed a deal.
Sugarfire.
Through Sugarfire. His parents, I think they own one or two of the franchises, not the whole company, but they own a franchise of that, at least one or two restaurants. And as a company, they're backing him as a spokesman, and he's making money off of it through NIL. And, you know, good for them, but at the end of the day, when schools are competing to see who can bid the most on players, what you've got is like a minor NFL draft. A lot of schools are going to be left out if they don't have an alumni base big enough to support that. It's just not fair. It's just not fair.
I agree.
They need to stop this.
I like the idea of a stipend. I hadn't thought of that idea, but that to me is way better than just giving. There's like an endless amount of money that someone could make. I don't know. Like, I think about Caitlin Clark, right?
Yes.
And this was in place when Caitlin Clark,
She made a ton of money junior and senior year.
I was going to say, it was definitely not her entire college career, but wow. I mean, she would have been raking in millions because all these big companies wanted to associate with her. Now, was she making Iowa a ton of money because those fans were filled every game? Yes. But she was also on a full ride scholarship. I don't know. I don't think this is necessary. I don't like it. It feels dirty to me. Now that you're involving politics in it, it really feels dirty to me.
I'd love to know what the rules are. I mean, I don't understand it that deeply, but I just can't imagine a university would approve political ads. I can't see them doing that.
I think if it's money, but it's the school would like the fact that if you come here, you could make more money. I don't know why they would stop it. They would just say you have the option to say no. I don't think that they would stop it. I really don't.
Hmm. Well, we may have to look into that. I can't envision that being okay. But John Tester, I think, is going to lose. He's been like a four-term senator in Montana. He's probably the only elected Democrat in the entire state of Montana.
He's like, I'm a farmer, and I still tend my land there.
Those are some freedom-loving patriots up there. Many of them are libertarians. They're certainly not Democrats. And Tester has managed to hang on up there somehow. I'm not quite sure how, but he's got a pretty serious challenge this time. So I don't think he's going to get reelected anyway, no matter how much NIL money he pays out.
We've got some people against our position there, Mark, on the stipend.
Oh, yeah.
They're also saying reach out to a student athlete. I would love to hear from a student athlete. Let me talk to the person making $0 and ask how they feel about the quarterback making millions.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, speaking of making money, is Sam Page, is he going to turn over his tax records? Because a new report says he's getting paid through at least Medicare for his work with the hospital, and that's illegal. We'll talk to Mark Harder coming up.
Get more at 971talk.com. Kim on a whim.
Kim on a whim is proudly brought to you by Missouri Brush Control. Enjoy your land the way you've always dreamed of. Learn more at MissouriBrushControl.com.
Forget having to go to the NFL. You don't need it anymore. You don't have to go to you don't have to be a professional anymore in your sport to potentially make millions, right? Thanks to NIL and the changes recently, these college athletes are raking in a ridiculous amount of money. Now, I have some frustration with NIL. But now I'm even more irritated hearing that a politician from Montana, or at least some group that is allegedly, well, the politician's like, oh, I have nothing to do with this group that's offering these student athletes at the University of Montana thousands of dollars in exchange for an endorsement. This group is called Montana Together. They reach out to all these athletes and they say, here's what we're going to do. If you're willing to record two scripted videos endorsing Senator John Tester, who's running for, I believe, a fourth term as U.S. Senator in Montana.
A Democrat.
Thank you. If you do two scripted videos, $400. You do two unscripted videos, we're going to give you $800. And Mark Cox, if you're willing to do four unscripted videos, these athletes would take in $2,400. $2,400. There was one student I saw, a female, who was quoted in this article saying that she was very irritated when she saw this because she says, as a female athlete, why the heck would I put out my endorsement for a politician who is in favor of men competing in women's sports? But when you dangle $2,400 in front of these athletes...
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I bet you a lot of them might be like, well, I don't really know if I support them. But well, there should be, but are there? I mean, who's to say this isn't happening in other states? Who's to say this isn't happening in Illinois and Missouri?
And if you weren't on that particular athlete's social media, you might not know about it. I mean, it could be happening. You're right. I don't know.
Well, and that's the thing.
I just can't believe the school wouldn't have some restriction on that. Normally, I think for NIL money, the money has to be funneled through the school for it to be legal. Like, not the school, but I know there's a group that through the alumni down at Mizzou who is now actively working in the St. Louis area to recruit businesses and wealthy individuals who are willing to donate to these NIL causes, right? So they can attract big athletes who might want to come to the University of Missouri and play basketball or football or whatever the case may be. They have to go out and do that. But I think it is regulated to some extent. It can't just be for anything.
But keep in mind, these schools are going to be competing now for the amount that they're offering these athletes. So if they have another avenue for these athletes to make money, in this case, you know, it relates to politics, I don't know that a school would stop them, because the school might make the argument, well, as an athlete, you have the option to say no. If this goes against your values, you just don't support it.
I've been opposed to this from the beginning. And as I explain this, I hope you'll understand, I don't have a problem if they want to move to a situation where student athletes are given a stipend by the university. University, particularly in the case of the sports that make money, like basketball and football, because of gate receipts, if they want to pay those students because they are earning a profit for the university through those sports, I understand that. Maybe you give them $500 a month or something so they have spending money, but you give it to everybody. You give it to everybody from the third string lineman to the starting quarterback. Everybody gets the same amount. There's no disparity there just because one person plays more often than the other. You have to play it across the board. And instead, they didn't do that, even though they're all, many of them are on scholarship. Instead of that, they said, okay, well, if you're really good, you can make $2 million while everybody else on the team makes nothing.
Right. That's going to create that's going to create the animosity among the team.
When we came in earlier this week, there was some product sitting on the counter back here from Luther Burden, the wide receiver for Mizzou.
Right.
And his NIL deal was with some potato chips or something, right?
Cookies. And
Red Hot Riblets.
Yeah. And Brady Cook just signed a deal.
Sugarfire.
Through Sugarfire. His parents, I think they own one or two of the franchises, not the whole company, but they own a franchise of that, at least one or two restaurants. And as a company, they're backing him as a spokesman, and he's making money off of it through NIL. And, you know, good for them, but at the end of the day, when schools are competing to see who can bid the most on players, what you've got is like a minor NFL draft. A lot of schools are going to be left out if they don't have an alumni base big enough to support that. It's just not fair. It's just not fair.
I agree.
They need to stop this.
I like the idea of a stipend. I hadn't thought of that idea, but that to me is way better than just giving. There's like an endless amount of money that someone could make. I don't know. Like I think about Caitlin Clark, right?
Yes.
And this was in place when Caitlin Clark, would have been
she
in her?
Lot of money.
She made a
junior,
ton of money.
Junior and senior
junior,
year.
I was going to say, it was definitely not her entire college career, but wow. I mean, she would have been raking in millions because all these big companies wanted to associate with her. Now, was she making Iowa a ton of money because those fans were filled every game? Yes. But she was also on a full ride scholarship. I don't know. I don't think this is necessary. I don't like it. It feels dirty to me. Now that you're involving politics in it, it really feels dirty to me.
I'd love to know what the rules are. I mean, I don't understand it that deeply, but I just can't imagine a university would approve political ads. I can't see them doing that.
I think if it's money that these but it's the school would like the fact that if you come here, you could make more money. I don't know why they would stop it. They would just say you have the option to say no. I don't think that they would stop it. I really don't.
Well, we may have to look into that. I can't envision that being okay. But John Tester, I think, is going to lose. He's been like a four-term senator in Montana. He's probably the only elected Democrat in the entire state of Montana.
He's like, I'm a farmer, and I still tend my land there.
Those are some freedom-loving patriots up there. Many of them are libertarians. They're certainly not Democrats. And Tester has managed to hang on up there somehow. I'm not quite sure how, but he's got a pretty serious challenge this time. So I don't think he's going to get reelected anyway, no matter how much NIL money he pays out.
We've got some people against our position there, Mark, on the stipend.
Oh, yeah.
They're also saying reach out to a student athlete. I would love to hear from a student athlete. Let me talk to the person making $0 and ask how they feel about the quarterback making millions.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, speaking of making money, is Sam Page, is he going to turn over his tax records? Because a new report says he's getting paid through at least Medicare for his work with the hospital, and that's illegal. We'll talk to Mark Harder coming up.
Get more at 971talk.com.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.